Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 129.
This week on the podcast, another school shooting, but instead of gun control, let's talk about Ebola. It knows where you live.
Alaskan pollsters just can't know who lives in Alaska and how to reach them. Hopefully next year's races won't be so close and they can get back to their real love, drunken limo rolling.
And fearing a repeat of Bush Clinton, Liz Warren is not running for president. She is instead aware of the many possibilities that the future might bring.
In military tactical news, man-on-man massage is how the terrorists win.
And every once in a while, reality stars are forced to live in reality. R.I.P. Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And that's what you should do.
That's right.
So today, I was talking to my mother before we started recording, mm-hmm. and she...
As you do.
As I do.
Driving home.
All the time, yeah. Driving home from work, and
trying to avoid the Los Angeles water mains.
Again, another breaks. Water main break.
Yeah, everywhere.
Hello, like, oh, can
like
we
10 in, like, the last
deal
year
with this somehow?
No, we're just going to fix them and as they come, which costs
always...
way more money than it does if we would just actually, like, fix all of them.
Of
and,
course.
Like, do a works project, but...
Also, I mean, they always are, like, on the worst intersections possible.
Yeah, of course.
Like, why can't there just be one in a place that no one drives home from work to?
Yeah, it was on Highland and Santa Monica today.
That couldn't be worse.
You know who was mad about that one? The trannies, that's who.
I bet. That's their corner.
End of their work night.
Yeah, exactly.
Early.
It's not unexpected vacation time.
I know I'm not supposed to say tranny, but I did it.
You did it.
Sorry.
What are we going to do? My mom, though, said to me, is your podcast going to just be all about Ebola? And I was like, no, fortunately, we have school shootings to talk about.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, God.
More of those guys.
Not yay.
Not
yay.
The
opposite of yay.
The opposite of yay. Seattle, of all places, had a shooting this week.
It seems like everybody should be happy enough that they wouldn't need to be shooting each other up there.
Or stoned enough.
Well,
just something.
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 Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it was kind of the guy didn't really fit the profile.
No, he didn't.
Until this week, basically.
Usually you hear about these school shootings, and then, like, you know, days later, you start to hear about, like, the troubled childhood that this person had, and they
right,
had
and
mental
they
health
had,
issues.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Like,
they hadn't been
always,
addressed.
They'd been and... playing violent video games, and, like, you know, just had... been killing animals all their lives or some, you know,
right.
things like that.
Something where you're like, uh-huh.
This kid was just sort of like a vaguely popular, just
yeah,
like...
his family and friends described him as happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
That's not who you think is going to shoot up your school. And
it's
that
not.
Makes you worry about all the happy-go-lucky people you know that you've always assumed you were safe around but might, in fact, shoot up your school or workplace.
Yeah.
He was like the freshman class prince, even. He was a freshman at a school in Seattle. His name... was Jalen Freiberg.
Mm-hmm.
He was a student at Marysville Pilchuck High School.
Right, outside of Seattle, I think.
Outside of Seattle, yeah. It's not... It's Seattle, the Seattle area.
Yes.
And he shot up his school cafeteria, but he was targeting friends and family. It wasn't just, like, a random shooting.
Right.
There were 5 people injured. 2 of them died.
Right. I think one actually just died.
One just died today. Yeah.
There were a few people. I think there's still a few people hospitalized.
Yeah.
Because one of the people who died had been in critical condition since Friday, which is when the shooting was.
One person died on site. 4 people were rushed to the hospital. One of them then died today.
Yeah.
And the 2 students who died are Zoe Galasso and Gina Soriano, who are both 14 and were both classmates of his. And then there were 3 others who suffered either head wounds or other injuries because he shot everyone in the head.
Right. One of whom is Andrew Freiberg.
One of whom is... And Andrew Freiberg and Nate Hatch were both cousins of his.
Right.
And then there was another girl, Shaylee, long last name, girl.
Yeah.
It's like Chuckle and Nasket.
I think you did it.
This is an area with an active Native American presence.
White, yes. Uh-huh.
And he was a member of one of the tribes
of the
in
tribes.
That area, the
right.
Tulip tribe. Not Tulip. Yeah. Tulip.
Yeah.
or Tualip, maybe? I bet it's
Tualip. It might be.
That's Tulalip. No. Listen, let's not,
no,
let's
don't know.
Not get hung up on this.
No.
But in any case, they are all still in either a critical or serious condition. And they were all friends or... the 2 men, or boys, I guess, were cousins of his. And no one... There had been this, like, weird turn in his social media presence. That was really the only clue
anyone
had.
Well, he was going
had.
Through a breakup, and
right.
so he was, like, doing, like, a lot of, like, sort of a little, like, wacky tweeting, I think, sort of, like, about, like, I don't know, like, just really how tragic his life was, sort of, like, just, like, in the days
People are
and
often
weeks,
doing
sort of,
that
like,
and not shooting up their schools, though,
well, right.
so it's hard to identify
right,
that's happening.
Right, you can't assume that the result of
Teenagers are some
tweeting.
Of the most dramatic tweeters out there.
Yeah.
But so, that was the only real clue that anyone could point to, and I think that probably is why the 3 victims that weren't related to him were female.
Yeah. Does it... Does it seem to you that this sort of, like, really went kind of, like, under the radar? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know if everybody is too panicked about Ebola, or if they're too panicked about ISIS, or things that, like,
or if at this point we can't be bothered with a school shooting
where less than
20 people died.
I think it's a combination of all of those things. Yeah. It wasn't, like, a bunch of, like, small, an entire elementary school shooting.
Right.
Getting caught. You know, it's just, well, two people in a high school.
That's, right, we'll tolerate
that's
that.
That's okay. I mean, it's on a Friday. We, you know, the weekend was coming. I mean, right. It's like, we couldn't be bothered for that long, obviously. You know, and of course, as we've learned from the NRA, that right immediately after a school shooting is too early to talk about.
Yes, of course.
Obviously. No. So then what happens is it becomes too late to talk about it, and then nobody cares about it.
It's been too late for years. Yeah, because we're 2 years past when we were supposed to be talking about it last time.
Right.
We've had no meaningful action on gun control in any way.
90% of the population wants there to be, like, some meaningful gun control, even if it's just background checks. But we still can't even do that.
Can't do that. And we are a country in which certain school districts in certain states that are in what I'm referring to as the wilds of the middle of the country are having parents petition to let their students have guns in their yearbook photos.
That's code for Nebraska, by the way.
That was code for Nebraska.
The wilds of the Midwest is Nebraska. Also Missouri, sometimes, I think.
I would believe anything that you told me right now. You're the expert. This is a school in Broken Bow, Nebraska, which this week gave the go-ahead for students to pose with guns in their senior yearbook photos because parents were petitioning to have that.
Now, there are a few restrictions on the photos.
They have to be tasteful.
They have to be, one, tasteful, which who knows what that means.
Right.
I don't trust anybody in Broken Bow, Nebraska to know what a tasteful photograph
also,
looks like.
If there is a gun in your senior photo, it is not tasteful. You've already broken the rules.
Yeah, and it can't be taken on school premises.
Thank God.
You can't show up to school.
They're not showing up after a hunting. They're not, like, taking hunting breaks at lunch to then pose with their guns.
In this article, there were, like, some, I think they had some senior pictures with people.
Yes, they did.
And it was, they were not.
They weren't tasteful.
They weren't great. No.
No.
They weren't tasteful. They weren't good. They weren't
anything.
But I love
that this is something that came from the parents.
You know, I took some very untasteful senior pictures, too, but it wasn't because they had guns in it. It was because it had a sweater vest in it. But, I mean, that was, that's a completely different.
A danger that we're anticipating from the Midwest. That's something that we're not shocked to see.
Right. I think I took one with my trombone. That wasn't great either.
No, probably not.
I mean,
but no one was going to die in a trombone attack
no.
at any time during that picture-taking session. No. Like, that was not going to happen.
No, it wasn't.
But yeah, this is, and I mean, you know, people have sort of said, like, oh, this is like a rural community. They're into hunting and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like on the one hand, like, yeah, guns are probably a part of everyone's life there. But it's sort of, there's sort of a larger issue when we just live in a society where that would be something, that would be your most meaningful object, the one in which you would want to share that with your senior class.
Right, to be memorialized in a yearbook.
Right.
You know, I mean,
you'd want to be in camo and then have your gun, your trusty shotgun with you.
Yikes.
So we live in that society. So no wonder we don't have any action on gun control.
Right.
Surprisingly, Canada had a shooting this week, too.
God. Like, I know, a terrorist attack.
A terrorist attack shooting. We're a bad influence on Canada. I think I can say that. Because Canada is this country that has a lot of guns.
Yeah.
Because people love hunting and fishing over in Canada.
Sure.
Because they're
But they're not killing each other with them, though.
They're not killing them with they have a lot of guns and a lot less gun violence, and no one really can explain why other than that Canadians are more polite than Americans, which is true. Yeah. It's kind of boring in Canada, but everyone's really nice there.
Yeah.
But they had a weird, like, pseudo-terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Where this guy, Michael Zehaf Bibo.
Sure.
He's a 32-year-old guy of, I think, Lebanese or Libyan extraction.
Yep.
He went to their National War Memorial and shot one of the soldiers who was there, Nathan Cirillo.
And then he went to the Parliament.
And then, he got his car and drove to Parliament Hill and then, like, almost basically walked in on the entire conservative caucus,
right.
But got caught and shot before he was able to.
He got gunned down.
He got gunned down, yeah. Before he was able to make it inside the House of Commons. But that happened in Canada.
Yeah.
That's where it happened.
And they are concerned that this is because they joined the U.S.-led air campaign against ISIS because, like, this guy, I think, had just converted. I mean, he was sort of like,
he was sort of a new radical.
He's one of these, like, a lone terrorist, basically, which sort of, like, is kind of a new concern that we're sort of, like, having to focus on. A lot of people have been talking about
that. Like, those teenagers that tried to join ISIS that were American.
Because you've got these people who are sort of, you know, converting to this sort of like radical Islam, and then they're sort of just like taking it on themselves to become sort of like, you know, local terrorists,
right.
Which is, you know, I mean, there's only so much damage they can do, but it still is a concern, obviously.
It's not what you want.
It's not what you want.
You want to have citizens want to abide by the laws.
Right. And not, so it's not shoot what you want. People at the park.
And there was also, there was a real panic raised because his mother was interviewed, and she was not interviewed in English, and they got a translation thing wrong, so it sounded like she was saying that, because he had had some issues getting a passport. And he wanted to, the real story is that he wanted to travel to Saudi Arabia to study the Quran, which sure. is maybe still concerning in this context. But it got translated to Syria, so then everyone really flipped the fuck out. And then that had to be retracted because it turned out that, I think his mother doesn't speak English, and so there was like a translation issue.
Yeah.
He had also made like a weird video recording of himself where he references Canada's foreign policy as being like a motivation for his actions. And, you know, he praises Allah and does what you do when like you're a radical terrorist who's trying to co-opt a religion.
Right.
For your evil aims.
Yep.
And he had like a knife and a gun, and they're trying to figure out where he got all these weapons.
Right.
They don't know where the gun came from. The wife was like at his aunt's house or something. I mean, the knife was at his aunt's house or something.
Yeah.
They did a lot of, they were really in this article obsessed with the where he had gotten the weapons, which I thought was interesting because in the U.S. you would never ask that question.
Right.
This kid shot up his high school and we were like, well, he had guns in the house. Of
course. Right, exactly.
Wasn't cute. We don't know where he got the guns was not the question.
No.
We know anywhere. We know he could get the guns anywhere. Right. Yeah. There's no
That's
question
irrelevant.
About that.
No.
That was never, yeah. In Canada, they're like really trying to track down where this gun came from, which is kind of weird to watch.
Well, there were, and I didn't read into this a lot, but there were some reports showing sort of like the difference between how Canada's press covered this terrorist attack
interesting.
Opposed to like how America does, and just sort of like
was it less sensationalistic?
Less sensationalistic and more responsible,
right.
and sort of like, you know, but so that was sort of like another interesting wrinkle.
They're just
too,
a more
like,
measured
it's,
people.
It's not sort of like, you know, a country that, you know, the Canadians weren't probably before this, you know, Americans are sort of like constantly, you know, have some sort of fear of a terrorist attack. It's sort of like, you know, it's like
we love to have a fear of something.
We have fear of something. We always had those, whether it was code red or code orange or whatever, when you were at the airport that Bush, you know, that the
a lot of color coding was going
and all
on,
that stuff or whatever.
We're like not, we're still not flying with liquids in this country.
Right. Canada is sort of like not trying to obsess over like what the terror code is before they get on a plane up there, because they're sort of like, it's not something they've been ultimately concerned about with or concerned about. I'm sure on some level they're not totally, you know, they're concerned about it on some level.
They're
because
not thrilled.
They're you know, right, exactly. They're not thrilled. But now they're probably all like, fuck, we have to worry about this too?
Yeah, and they don't want to have to deal with that in Canada.
No.
They like to just be left alone in Canada.
They do.
They don't want to
this
nonsense.
Well, don't follow us into some...
Right. We had an interesting conversation...
Dumbass war that we're in.
...to Australians yesterday where they... started going on about our Iraq war, and I was like, weren't you guys in the coalition of the willing?
I know.
And they were like, well, the U.S. made us do it. And I was like, I feel like probably Canada feels that way too. Like, anything that they join us in is probably something where they're like, the U.S. made us do it. And while I don't know if that's ultimately a fair point to make, because, like, I don't feel like the U.S. is... For Canada, maybe, because we're on their border, but I don't know that Australia has the same sort of, like, inability to trade with anyone else.
Yeah.
But... I do feel like there's probably a mentality there where they're sort of like not ultimately thinking that this was their idea and don't really want to have to deal with it because of that.
Right.
They would rather the U.S. get all the ire
for
their foreign policy because they're sort of like, the U.S. made us do it.
Totally.
You know?
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Because that was so interesting because I was like, this is so weird with us and, you know, Brent and I are sort of far lefties. And so when us getting shit from people who aren't American about a war that they joined us in, I was like...
Minute.
Hold on, guys. Back up.
Right.
Are you, like, you're not French. Like, so I know that you're not, like, able to claim the moral high ground in this conversation. But it was sort of interesting.
Yeah, it was.
But I feel like we learned a little bit about Canada's mindset as well in
I'm
that
sure they
conversation.
Say the same, think
I'm sure.
The same thing.
If I were I say the same thing and I'm American a lot of the time.
Exactly.
The U.S. made me do it. Like, so, you know, Canada.
Totally.
I would totally be all over that.
Yeah, I would too.
In any case, on to Ebola. By the way, Ebola is my new CDS.
Oh, yeah.
Now, right. Instead of referring to things as death illnesses, which mm-hmm. is what I normally do, right. I just refer them, like, I hurt my Ebola. Foot. I've been calling it foot Ebola, all day.
I know.
My mom, I called my mom and she was like, yeah, I think I have throat Ebola.
It's not great. You know, Lila for years talked about CDS, which is her chronic death syndrome.
Yeah.
That she has whenever she gets
anytime
sick.
Anytime I have a symptom, it's just a large, it's part of a larger CDS problem that I have.
Yeah.
So now I have Ebola.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like CDS.
Yeah. You know who doesn't have Ebola, though?
Yeah, Nina Pham.
Nina Pham, that nurse from Dallas who had Ebola.
And I think that Amber Vinson's about to be released as well. I think she also doesn't have Ebola.
Which one is she? I'm sorry.
She was the second nurse.
Oh, right.
The one who flew and then caused the panic in Maine and Missouri or wherever it was, where there's like three people who accidentally crossed paths with her and then everyone panicked.
Yeah, exactly. But Nina Pham, she went to the White House. And she got a hug.
Real fast.
Right. And she got a hug from President Obama, which everybody was sort of like, you know.
It was the optic that really we've all been waiting for.
Yeah. You know what I've been seeing a lot on my Facebook, and I don't know if you have as well or not. You probably have as many gay Facebookers as I
probably.
Do. But a lot of people have been talking about, you know, because there's been a lot of, you know, discussion about, like, Obama's terrible response to Ebola, basically.
Right.
And people have been, and granted, it's not the same thing in any way, shape, or form, but, like, the Obama response to Ebola and the Reagan response to AIDS.
We're getting AIDS references now.
Yeah. You know, before Reagan even said the word AIDS, like 200,000 people had died or something like that. And it was like 8 years after, like, people had started getting it in New York.
I will say that,
like, really
Obama has said Ebola since the first American got it abroad and came
he's
back to treatment.
Trying to deal with it. We can talk about whether
he's effectively dealing with it. But he's
not ignoring
it's on his mind. He's admitted that it's a problem.
Right.
Possibly because it just randomly affects people, and it's not like he can be like, gay people, I don't care about gay people, they don't exist. Like, that's not something you can say about Ebola.
No.
Especially now that all of New York might be getting Ebola.
That's the other update.
The day before Nina Pham was released and flown to the White House to hug President Obama, a doctor was rushed to the ER in New York because he had Ebola.
Yeah.
This was Craig Spencer, who is an ER doctor who volunteered with Doctors Without Borders in Guinea. Came home from Guinea, like, got on the subway, went, you know, took an Uber, went bowling, visited a coffee shop, had some food at a restaurant.
Right. But the thing about him is that...
And panicked everybody when he then...
He panicked everybody because they have sort of course, like, had to go back and
figure
trace
out
the
where
steps
he'd been,
and stuff like that. And that's obviously, like, a reasonable thing to do. But the thing about Ebola is if we're to believe the things that we're supposed to believe about Ebola, is that he was obviously... carefully watching himself because he knew that he had come home. And supposedly you cannot give Ebola to people if you don't have the symptoms. And there's like a 21-day sort of like incubation period. So as soon as he started feeling sick, he was like immediately in the hospital. Like he wasn't like riding around the subway
like joyriding
his like bloody Ebola like germs all over everywhere. Like that's not what was going on.
What I have been seeing a lot of though is people who would otherwise totally trust the scientific community like being like, should we maybe be overreacting to this? Uh-huh. Because it seems like a lot of the people who are going to treat Ebola and are believing they're taking the proper precautions
are not getting it, right?
And are getting it.
Yeah.
So it's been sort of, that's been an interesting thing to watch.
I mean,
only because people who would otherwise, you know, people who are getting on, you know, their computers posting about climate change and posting, you know, all of the things that you would reasonably believe as a reasonable person who believes in science are suddenly like, should we be so lax about Ebola? Which is. Funny. It's interesting. Yeah. I'm not worried about going to New York and getting Ebola.
Right.
Myself.
Yeah.
Maybe because this guy was hanging out.
You had to worry about it before it was even in America.
I know. I mean, I've been worried. I have a general purpose worry about getting Ebola that is not related to fact in any way. That is just sort of like a general sort of like philosophical concern for Ebola.
Yeah.
But like my mother's in New York right now.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned that she has Ebola. She has throat Ebola, according to her. But I don't think that's real Ebola.
I don't either.
But this guy... And she's not hanging out in Williamsburg, luckily. There's been, like, a big show of them, like, decontaminating the bowling alley that he was at and then having people go bowl there. And they decontaminated his apartment and his fiancé is being quarantined now at Bellevue. And so then, a day after this hell broke loose, the Cuomo and Christie, the governors of New York and New Jersey, decided they were going to institute some real extreme Ebola policies. There are two of the states that have been... sort of cleared to take people from West African nations, cleared to sort of handle flights from West African nations. They are instituting mandatory 21-day quarantine policies for any medical worker who went to West Africa to help treat Ebola. And the first person that they quarantined under this policy was Casey
Hickox. Yes.
Who was a nurse who had been treating Ebola patients in West Africa. And that got real dramatic real fast.
Dramatic.
She made a big stink because they were, like, keeping her in, like, an unsanitary, disgusting, like, tent with no running water.
Right. She was, like,
somewhere in New Jersey.
She was, like, in an Ebola prison.
Yeah.
She was in an Ebola prison. Like, she was back in West Africa.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
So, I think in New York, it's going to be a little less stringent than in New Jersey. I think in New York, you can quarantine in your house, and they were sort of,
right.
I think they probably are a little bit better set up in New York to deal with this. And de Blasio was not really on board with this. He was trying to be like, you guys can do what you want, but, like, maybe we should also not tread on everyone's civil liberties while we're doing this.
Well, and she
she was being forcibly detained.
And she wrote an op-ed that was, like, in some, like, I think it was, like, in a Dallas paper or something like that. She's actually now finally getting released because, like, I think it's either been the 21 days or she's, like, tested negative or whatever it is. I don't know. But she's, like, she's going home. She's going back to Maine.
Yeah.
But she's suing.
She's suing. She has Norman Siegel repping her.
Right, who's, like, a big civil rights attorney, and she wrote, like, this op-ed where she was, like, and she also, like, made some pretty disparaging remarks, like, about Chris Christie. She was, like, I don't think he's a doctor, and he certainly has never laid eyes on me, and was, like, she really, like, took him to task. She's been making the rounds. She's on CNN, and she's like, I mean, she's not fucking around with them at all.
There were photos taken of the conditions that she was staying in.
I think she tweeted some of these photos,
She tweeted a bunch of, and
it did not look like
they were not acceptable.
No.
It was not so much as a room in Bellevue.
Right.
It was literally a tent in the middle of nowhere where there was no running water.
Yeah.
And she was, like, being passed food, like, through, like, a plastic flap, but, like, there was not a flushing toilet in there. There was, like, I think she's probably having to, like, sponge bath herself because, like, what else are you going to do? Like, it was just not acceptable.
No.
And then also now, all of these soldiers that we sent over to West Africa to help them deal with this.
Right. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago or maybe a month or so ago, but we sent, like, 3,000 troops over to West Africa to sort of, like, help out with whatever they can help out with as sort of non-doctors to help. I'm sure they were probably just helping with, like, you know, get things organized and probably helping set up
field units, maybe, that sort of
things like that. But anyway, so they're coming back now, and they've gone through, I think, some bases that we have, like, in Italy or something, and
they're being quarantined there.
They're being quarantined, not all of them, but I think there's, like, 12 people who sort of, like, have direct contact or something like that. But, you know, the army is taking, like, even further precautions than sort of, like, the CDC recommends, but because they're sort of, like, they're forcing sort of, like, a 21-day quarantine, too, sort of, like, before they... I don't think they're quarantining, but they're making them, like, check in with the doctors, like, twice a day or something like that, like, before they can be reintegrated back into
Allowed to leave Italy. Like, they're not allowed to leave the base.
They're staying on the base, and they're not being, like, allowed to go, I think, back into their, like, whatever platoon or whatever it is that you're in. I don't know what those words are or mean or anything like
that. Let's call it a platoon, though. I think that sounds very militaristic.
Yeah, that was a movie, I know.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
It's about a platoon.
Right.
It's what the movie Platoon is about.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you more than that.
Nope, me either.
And then in response to New York and New Jersey flipping out so hard about this, the CDC today announced new mandates for healthcare workers who had been in West Africa treating Ebola. And now they're going to require in-person checkups and phone calls regularly for anyone that returns from West Africa after having treated Ebola patients. So they, I think, are trying to kind of, like, strike a balance between the mandatory quarantine that is being imposed in New York and New Jersey and the lack of any interest that the federal government seemed to have in doing anything.
Well, that too.
And while also potentially allowing people to have their civil rights.
People locking people up in a prison someplace.
Exactly.
With no running water.
Exactly.
Right.
In any case, so that's a disaster,
that's
as you might
Ebola
expect. And if you live in a place, now you have to worry about getting Ebola.
That's it. Anywhere.
Anywhere you go.
Yeah.
Could Ebola, throat
anywhere.
Ebola.
Oh, God.
Ebola. they're all everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yikes.
Meanwhile, Senate updates.
Oh, yeah. We've been doing
Senate
this for the last couple
still
weeks.
Happening.
We're just going to keep going with it.
Well, there's no
we
other
vote
news.
Soon.
We vote soon,
by
guys.
The way, guys.
Did you see our
pumpkin? We made a pumpkin. We made a vote
to remind you to vote.
Yeah. If you didn't know before yesterday, then you should know.
You should know.
Because
Election Day is coming up fast.
Yeah.
And we both got our Democratic Party voting suggestion. You need those in California. I was telling my mom some of the offices that we have to vote for, and she was like, the insurance commissioner?
Yeah.
Are they serious? And I was like, they're real serious.
Yeah.
They're not joking.
Yeah.
There's like 6 propositions, and there's a lot of offices you didn't even know existed that we're voting for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now we know exactly who the Democrats would like us to vote for.
Yeah.
And while I may take them up on some of those lesser-known candidates,
I was going to say, we're going to have to...
I'm not going to vote for Adam Schiff. I know
he's
fine.
You can't always trust
him. But there's someone better out there, and I will find that person.
Right. Or write somebody in. He's going to win anyway.
He's going to win anyway. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Is in those, I'm happy to write someone in a race where someone's definitely going to win.
Right.
It's more fun that way.
Yeah, that's, sure.
Because sometimes then, also, they keep track of those, and you can, they're a matter of public record, so you can look up what the writing candidates were for any given race. You find people have misspelled Mickey Mouse a lot of the time. Madonna gets written in a lot of the time for things. Yeah. Like, any, people are just writing in whoever.
Yeah. My, parents are, this is the first time that they'll get to vote in California, so they're very excited about that. But they're, of course, like, studying up, because, like, they're like, props? What? I have to vote on 1,000 different things?
You do so much work to vote here.
But also, they were, so, you know that we have the jungle primary system, and in Los Angeles, the only thing that that gets you is just sometimes having to pick between two Democrats. Right. They are living in Palm Desert, which is a little bit more conservative. It's a lot of sort of an older crowd. It's a richer crowd, not necessarily where they are, but I mean, like, you know, it's sort of like a,
in the rich
it's
part.
Like a nice, you know,
it's a fancy desert community. It's
fancy desert community, right. So they have a couple things where they're having to pick between two Republicans.
Don't like that.
No. So, it would, and it was interesting too, because when I went to that rally, they were giving out stickers for one of the Republicans because it was a woman and she was at least pro-choice. So they were sort of like pushing this pro-choice Republican. And I told my mom, I was like, just vote. I was like, the Nordstroms are just writing any old person in. Like, with that, like, just pick your
stuff. Yeah, my mom often votes for her friend Chuck for things that she doesn't want
to vote for. Vote for Chuck.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's great.
Yeah, I'm sure he's lovely. You know, it's like,
I voted for Chuck.
Like, if you happen to pick between two people that you don't want, then just write in a third person who's not going to win. Who fucking cares?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
anyway. But in terms of the Senate, here's the lay of the land. Here's what has to happen.
Here's it.
For the Republicans to take back control, they need a net 6 seats. All right. They've got Montana is going to be a net for them because they're going to win that. West Virginia, the same. South Dakota. We can all sort of declare that those are over. A while ago, people were trying to pretend like South Dakota wasn't because there was that independent candidate, and it was sort of like a close three-way race.
By a while ago, we mean recently.
Right. But, yeah, I think last week.
I think as early as last week we were talking that. But now,
Mike Rounds is back ahead by, like, 10 points or something like that. So everybody's back to writing that off. Because the Democrats even, like, were deciding to spend some money there, right?
No, that was why we decided to be excited, because the Democrats suddenly piped in with some cash.
Well, that was well spent.
Yeah. Well, they're not always geniuses.
No. Anyway, okay. So now they need... So that's three. They need three more. And here are the list of states that are sort of like the ones that everybody feels like are in play that they could possibly win. Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Iowa, Louisiana, and North Carolina. That's 7 states. They only need to win 3 of those,
it's
which
a
is sort of like
terrible number.
Which is like a big yikes. This is why everyone is giving them like a 70% chance of taking back the Senate.
Right.
There are a few things that could make that maybe a little bit trickier for them, because there are some races that could either be like that could be pickups for the Democrats, which would make the Republicans then have to win more of those 7. Kansas being one of them. Now that's an independent who's running there,
and he hasn't really said who's going to out of that race.
He hasn't really said who he's going to caucus with. I think he sort of hinted that he would caucus with whoever was in power.
Right.
So that's a little
bit. It's not clear what kind of gain that is, and for who.
Right. In Georgia, Michelle Nunn has a slight lead, and that would be a pickup for the Democrats because that's Saxby Chambliss's seat. Right. He's retiring. I mean, it's within the margin of error, so it's basically tied. And then there are recent polls that shows Kentucky getting closer again.
I would love that.
So I think there was even like a poll that people were sort of like, you know, saying like, well, this is the only poll that way, but actually had Lundgren-Grimes
ahead.
I think we talked about that one.
Yeah,
that
was the one
where
last week.
She's getting better with men, like, and we talked about like that ad where she was like off skeet shooting and stuff like that.
Right.
Remember?
She knows her Kentucky audience.
And I think that like Hillary Clinton is going there in the next week.
Right,
and, like,
they're
going
to be piping.
They're really sort of like,
well, that would be such a huge.
They're trying to turn
victory
that around,
from a propaganda point of view.
Right. So if the Democrats can win any of those three, however many they win, that's that many more that the Republicans have to win out of those that list that we just gave to you of all of the seats. So there's been a lot of polling recently. NBC did some polling, and CNN has been doing some polling, too, of those remaining states to sort of, like, try and figure out whether the Republicans are going to take it or not. So there's some mixed news in those polls.
And some states that have no news.
Some Or wacky news.
Or wacky news.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. So Arkansas is basically tied. That's Republican Tom Cotton is at 45, and Mark Pryor is at 43. That's within the margin of error. And Cotton was ahead by 5 points the last time they did this poll, so it's actually getting closer in favor of the Democrats. He's still losing,
and
Pryor's
an incumbent, at least, so at least, you know, maybe there will be some sort of last-minute benefit
to
that.
That's basically a draw. at this point.
Right.
Colorado, ditto, also basically a draw. The Republican is ahead 46-45. The unfortunate thing there is that the Democrat, the last time they did this poll, was ahead 48-42. So that's gotten closer in favor of the Republican, which is not what you're looking for.
That's leading the wrong, into the,
that's going, the wrong it's going direction. The wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Iowa, still, again, 49-46. Like, I really thought, although she had a lot of problems last week.
Wait, these polls probably don't reflect those things yet.
She's been
talking some nonsense recently.
There were some issues with, like, some taxes that she dodged on a rental property last week. There was, she dodged all of the editorial boards of all of the major state newspapers. So, and that was, like, a big news story, like, locally last week. So, I think that, hopefully, that'll, you know, move in a way.
Something.
But who knows? Maybe it won't.
I don't
know.
It's such a terrible race.
Ugh, it's a terrible race. She's awful. He's awful. It's like...
It's like another one where you gotta... Sometimes you end up voting for Chuck in this race just because everyone's so awful.
Vote for Chuck.
Yeah.
That's it. You should make a campaign sign. Vote for Chuck. No last name. No office that he's running for.
Could just be our term for not voting for either of the candidates. Like voting for Chuck in the presidential election just means
Chuck
third party. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's again within the margin of error. North Carolina, Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis are tied at 43%. I think that is one actually too that a couple of these states have a
runoff.
And I don't remember which ones they are. I think North Carolina might be one of those. I can't remember, but there's
because there's a third party candidate in that race. So if they do have a runoff, that could be tricky.
I know Louisiana is too, because like Mary Landrieu is basically like tied with the Republican, but there's like a Libertarian candidate who's getting like 11% of the vote or whatever. So like when they pull the runoff election of just her and the Republican, like she's getting blown out basically. So, but that doesn't happen until January. I guess a lot of things could happen until then, but that's,
runoff is not until January.
Yeah.
What kind of nonsense, crazy people are they over there?
I know.
Yeah. Nuts.
Yeah. And then, Alaska is the biggest doozy because they haven't figured out, they're apparently not, and this is just not shocking to me, they don't know how to poll things. They don't know how to do math up there.
Right, no, it's, depending on who you talk to, anyone could be leading by like 11 points.
There are seriously polls that show either candidate like way ahead or that it's tied. Basically, no one really knows what's going on.
When we were talking about this, like, is it that hard to poll a tiny state like Alaska?
I know. Like, you would think that you would, at this point, like, know how to do this. Like, I mean, there's,
I feel like
cause
you
I
call
brought
some
up,
people and you ask them who they're voting for, and they're representative of people.
Right.
And then you have numbers.
Right, because
then
you hear about oftentimes, like, it's like I was telling you earlier, like, you hear oftentimes about, like, how the Iowa caucus is so hard to poll.
Right.
But that's, like, one of these things
where, people are forced to make a second-tier decision where their
person They're also sort of,
and
like,
they have to move
you
to
go
person.
In and you have to do it in front of people, too. So it's
right,
sort of,
there's
like,
some strategy
like
to it.
Of, like, there's all of that going on. So, like, that sort of, like, makes sense that you can't just, like, ask somebody who they're going to vote for. Because it's not, you don't go in and, like, check a box for, like, somebody's name.
Exactly.
But, like, that's what you do in Alaska. Like, presumably you should be able to
like a normal person.
Cross section of the people that are either registered or probably
voters.
Are
those people giving a different answer to every pollster that calls them? Because that would be interesting.
Maybe. Yeah.
By the way, is there a way that we could go and watch the Iowa caucuses happen somewhere one day?
Oh,
I feel like
that would
fascinate me.
Yeah, right?
I've never been to the caucuses, as you would imagine, because I've never been to Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to watch a bunch of people mill around a room standing in various corners and then having to, like, move to a new corner when their person disappears. Like, that just sounds fascinating.
I know, it does. I only got to do it once.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Yeah, I know.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
In any case.
It was for Al Gore.
The worst of all the elections to have to do that in.
I know, right?
What a mess.
And it wasn't very exciting either, because there were no second-tier choices. I mean, it was just sort of like...
Right, that
wasn't...
Even,
there were only two people running, so it's like you couldn't even go to, like, the, you know, if you...
It's not like one of those ones where there's, like, a... 7,000 candidates running in the primary.
Where there's, like, not enough corners of the room
to
go to, basically.
And they have to, like, have a middle group and a whatever, and then those people have to disperse to different, you know.
No, it was Al Gore, Bill Bradley, and that was...
That was the...
What you wrote. That was it.
That was it. That was the whole thing.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, gosh. Well, this is a sad end for Chris McDaniel, finally.
What a shock that he's having a sad end.
This was
this
our favorite story.
This is his third sad end,
this was our favorite story for months, basically.
Yeah.
Like, this is going back to the Mississippi... Senate primary between the incumbent,
which
Thad
was
Cochran,
I think in the spring or something,
and Chris McDaniel, who was the Tea Party challenger, and it didn't go, neither of them won in the first round, so it had to go to a runoff, and Thad Cochran, sort of going into the final days of that runoff, sort of really made a full court press for, like, the African-American vote there. It was basically like, I'm less evil. Right. The Republican in this state is going to win.
And so, I'm like, less evil than this guy.
Right. And so all the Tea Partiers are like, wait a minute, the black people can't be voting in this in this primary.
So Chris McDaniel decided to tell everyone what's what.
Yeah, that's right.
Started offering rewards for people knowing of voter fraud, which was his word for black people voting.
Code for black
people at the polls. And then he also tried to...
claim that he won with the real Republican vote. Based on, like, which there's no way to... hopes and dreams. I mean, he didn't... There's no way to count...
wasn't based on the number of people.
Real Republican votes in a primary. There's exactly. No way to do that.
So then he went to the courts and was like, he can't have black people voting for him. That's fair.
That's not fair. Right.
Then he lost.
He lost. As it may not shock you. And they didn't even actually hear the case because apparently not only does he not want black people to vote, he's unfamiliar with like voting law in the state, which also isn't shocking to you because if he was, he would know that black people actually can't vote.
Because they also told him that he filed too late.
Right.
And
because
then
he was like, no, I didn't. They didn't even take the case because like you're supposed to, when you're like, there's like a...
if there's like voting irregularities, there's an amount of time that can pass
and it's
in which you're supposed to file.
It's 20 days. And what happened was, is that 20 day voting or window is like in like the voting law in the state from like 1908 or something like that. A lot of that voting law was rewritten in 1986.
Exactly.
And so...
McDaniel claimed that deadline
had either been changed.
So when they filed 41 days after the election,
they filed like 3 weeks late, and the court was like, "Actually, that's not the law is still very much on the books." So you filed 3 weeks too late.
He doesn't have a crack lawyer team working with him. It doesn't seem like
the case didn't even get heard.
No,
I almost wish that it would have been heard.
It would have been a great case.
Hearing him arguing against black people voting in his party's primary would have been in Mississippi, of all places, would have been really great for the Democrats.
Yeah, it's so true.
But nationally,
they could have maybe even won that state for the first time ever.
I know. So anyway, that's over now.
It's over
There's
now.
Probably no more news there, which is upsetting that was.
Hopefully Chris McDaniel will make another appearance out there in the world, running for some Mississippi office that where he can. Also be angry about women voting, maybe? I mean, there's so many options. Once you're thinking people shouldn't vote.
Hispanic?
Yeah, no. There's...
gays probably shouldn't be voting either.
Well, gays shouldn't be living in Mississippi.
That's true.
So let's start there.
If all the gays in Mississippi stopped voting, it would probably be a very minuscule difference that you would see in what was happening with the vote in Mississippi. Yeah.
Meanwhile, some more interesting news from Alaska.
Oh, God. As interesting as the...
as the fact that they don't know how to properly poll their own state.
Right. Or as the Palin brawl that we've been covering for the last couple of weeks.
This has been great Alaska news recently.
Really has.
But this is Palin related.
It is,
so at least we have that.
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, specifically.
Yeah, Mama Palin.
Mama Palin is in a fight with her former lieutenant governor.
Yes.
From her brief stint as governor of Alaska.
Before she abruptly just, like, retired in 2009, her lieutenant governor took over, and he's now running for his first full term.
Right.
On the job.
And last year, he restructured the oil and gas taxes that she had dismantled when she was in office.
Right.
It was her only thing she did in office.
Right. It was like her one sort of like what she sort of like saw as one
the
of her
like cornerstone
personal,
of her.
Yeah. It was like a legacy thing that she did while she was there, basically. And so she was really pissed at him. And so she has endorsed the unity ticket,
which is like a unification of independent and
Democrat candidates. Right. Against her own lieutenant governor. She endorsed a ticket with a Democrat on it, people.
She's a person who doesn't understand how politics works, even in the smallest... slightest way.
No.
Because that's not what you do.
No.
That's not your plan.
She made a revenge endorsement.
Don't endorse anyone if that's your plan.
Yeah.
Don't make your own legacy look even stupider when after your lieutenant governor dismantled the one legacy thing you did, you decide to disown him and endorse a Democrat.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that. It's not a plan. So in any case, Sarah Palin is up to the kinds of shenanigans you would expect her to be up to in Alaska. And Alaska is as hilarious as it's ever been.
God bless them up there.
Right? They're really making the news work for them.
They are. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren she's been out on the trail.
That's me rubbing my hands together in excitement, by the way.
She's been out on the trail a little bit, just like campaigning for people. And so people keep asking her if she's going to run for president.
Right. She's announcing it. She's like,
she's giving categorically negative,
she didn't want anything to do with the Ready for Warren thing when like that got launched on Facebook. Like, I mean, she's like, she's been sort of like really out there against anybody asking her if she's running for president. Like just no, really shutting people down.
Exactly.
Until
then she did an interview with People Magazine where she said this. If there's any lesson I've learned in the last 5 years, it's don't be so sure about what lies ahead. There are amazing doors that could open.
That's a declaration of candidacy. Yeah.
In political speak. It is. Yeah, if you were a politician speaking out loud to a news media outlet, mm-hmm.
And you want to tell them that you're running for president, but can't say, I'm running for president, you say, if there's any lesson I've learned in the last 5 years, it's about...
Don't be so sure about what lies ahead. It's saying that you don't know what could be in your future. You're not responsible for what happens. Anything could happen.
Right.
You could run for president.
That's right.
These are the exact words that Hillary Clinton has been whipping out every 5 seconds mm-hmm. about her own candidacy, which we know is happening.
Right. I'm going to make a decision soon, is what I think. Mm. Once you're debating with yourself.
If you're having to make the decision, you've made it.
That's it. You did it.
That's already. You've done it. Yeah. There's mm-hmm. It's over.
And this article, which was from the Washington Post that was like covering this, basically, talked about, and this is why, you know, you can't necessarily totally lose the party's nomination in Iowa, but you can certainly get off
on
certainly get off on the wrong foot, which is what she did the last time she got third. I would contend that even if she got second last time, she could maybe potentially be the president right now. But I mean, it was just so
people wanted to vote for someone who definitely was not going to be president more than they wanted.
She lost
to
John
her.
Edwards in the Iowa primary. Everyone should remember this.
Right. Like, yeah. He was a man who I voted for because he was a populist candidate, which means he was not ever going to win that candidacy even a little bit.
Right. Exactly.
And yet he beat her in the primary in Iowa.
Right. Yeah. So, so the reason that we bring this up is that she is still underwater with her approval rating in Iowa. They just, the Clintons have never had a good run of it there. Bill lost in Iowa. Hillary's now lost in Iowa. Granted, Bill was running against Tom Harkin that year, so that's not shocking that he lost that.
But Hillary was running against a series of nobodies.
Right, exactly. So her disapproval there is 49% and 47% approve. So it's close. But only 30% strongly approve of her. And that is compared with 39% who strongly approve of Sarah Palin. Yikes. And 38% who strongly approve of Obama. And we know what his approval rating is doing right now. So, like,
might be the only people in America who approve of him right now, but more of them approve of him than Hillary.
Yeah. So she's got some, this is why the door, I feel like, is always open. It almost makes me half feel bad for her, but not really. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
well, sure.
Like,
once you're happy, that as a person who's been actively trying to dismantle
the one thing that you want in the world
going into a presidential election
could possibly, you know, be doomed by some bullshit state in the Midwest. And I say that as a person who is from there,
right?
But do you know what I mean? Like, I can imagine how this really probably just like makes her want to like go and just like blow the state and turn it into a parking lot. Like,
This is a problem that residents of every state have with Iowa themselves, because oftentimes their candidates are getting picked by a bunch of people in the Midwest.
But can you throw us a bone for not picking her?
No, I've thrown you many a bone. That thrills me to no end. I'm just saying, like, she's having the problem that America is having. It's the one problem you don't want to have as the very moderate Democratic candidate.
Right.
Because you shouldn't be having it there.
Right. No,
it's not like there's a bunch of lefty wackos.
No, it's not. Like a bunch
that's
of
why I get mad at Iowa.
There. Right.
If it was Vermont, I'd be thrilled if they were picking our candidates for
let's
us.
Send all
that would be great.
There. Yeah.
But with it being Iowa, my issue has always been that they don't pick liberal enough candidates there, and we get stuck with moderate people.
Right.
We get stuck with John Kerry.
Which I think is why the Democrats choose to have it there.
Exactly. Of course.
We end up with safe candidates.
To be the ultimate safe candidate in one regard, in that you are a Republican who has always called themselves a Democrat
and
has
still not
changed
be able to
the Democratic message to suit your own Republican needs and still not be able to win Iowa must really fucking piss her off. And it thrills me that Iowa at least has some standards.
Well,
you know?
Thanks.
Makes me feel great.
But so our fear of a Clinton-Bush
might be totally founded.
Race could be a real thing, because the other news of this week is that all the Bushies, family and otherwise, are really getting jacked up about a Jeb
and
2016
run. Finally told Barbara to shut up.
Right, because Barbara...
She was walking around having none of it.
Barbara's unconvinced.
Yeah.
And she's been quite publicly unconvinced.
Yeah, she said she thought that we'd had enough Bushes. And I tend to agree with her. I think that's the first thing that she's ever said that
I
agreed with.
I don't like Barbara, but
she's a bitch.
She keeps it real.
She keeps it real. She has given birth to every Bush that currently is out there ruining the world and or married them.
Right, exactly.
So she's part of the problem, because she's the thing they all have in common.
Yeah.
You know? Barbara's, like, probably one of the most evil women on Earth.
Right.
She's like the Dick Cheney of the Bush family. Yeah, she's known as such.
Yeah.
But she's not fucking around.
Yeah.
She'll tell you what she thinks. And what she thinks is that it is not a good time to have a Bush candidacy. What no male member of the Bush clan thinks currently is that it's not time. Well, they're ready for number three.
Well, I think what this article sort of like interestingly points out, which I had actually not even thought of, this is from the New York Times talking about this, is that the other two Bushes sort of, and whether they will say this publicly or not, they probably wouldn't ever, but sort of see him as like a legacy saver at this point.
He was the great white hope of the Bush clan in the first place. He wasn't, W wasn't supposed to be the one that became president. No. That was supposed to be Jeb always.
And his presidency was seen as such an abject failure. And of course, the elder Bush did not win re-election. So it's sort of like, you know, they feel like if Jeb could win, it would sort of like potentially save the family name, because it's not a great name currently.
And they've gotten a lot of shots.
Yeah,
more shots than anyone except the Adamses, basically, like the Roosevelts. There's only a few families that can claim two different presidential candidates.
Yeah,
and they are one of them, and they have literally only ever failed at being president.
That's right.
I think that's absolutely true. I think and Bush was always, I mean, Jeb was always the smarter Bush.
Right.
That's always been known. I wouldn't call him smart in the sort of general subjective sense of smart.
Right.
But I would call him smart compared to some of the other Bush options that we've seen.
Exactly. And the other thing that's interesting here is that, because obviously, you know, through generations of, you know, the Bushes, and so they're all in politics now at this point. I mean, like the kids of these kids are, you know, the George the Bush Sr.'s grandkids are now are in politics as well. They have sort of assembled a long list of political friends, basically, if you will, from various states. I mean, you know, they're from all over now at this point. And they are also sort of jumping at the chance to sort of, you know, this is their way to get back on top, too. So they've got everybody who is just sort of like, you know, from sort of like strategists and pollsters and fundraisers and donors and
Everyone's getting
like,
all fired up.
All of these people are sort of like ready to go.
Well, and the other thing that I think everyone has sort of been suggesting is that a Bush might be able to fix some of the issues in the Republican Party that...
Well, right. Could it be sort of like a legacy person? Would that be like the type of person...
Would that get rid of some of the dissension? Some,
you know, the party to sort of like coalesce around someone.
I think that's not true.
I don't either,
because
but
they're the ones that caused the problem in the first place. It was W that caused the Tea Party, you know, split off in the first place to occur. So I don't think that And I think that it would be difficult for them to bring the Tea Party back under their tent as the Bush family, because those people hate Bush.
Yeah.
You know, they'll make excuses for some of his worst policies, but they don't like him.
No.
And they were trying to distance themselves from him from the get-go. That's why they're causing all this trouble.
But the other thing that was interesting, I felt like, in this article is that, you know, I think that we heard a lot of talk about this because we always knew that Jeb was the one who really sort of had initial intentions to be president. And everyone sort of, like, declared that idea dead on arrival as soon as the last Bush presidency was over. Now, you know, there's some sort of, you know, nostalgia for the type of governing that the first Bush had. And there's
some
softening.
Obama's underwater.
Obama's way underwater. And there's some sort of like, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about some softening of George W. Bush's image, which is shocking to me.
Shocking.
Like, we joked that we thought he was going to be the first president that was going to be forever hated.
Right.
But apparently, that's not
apparently
the case.
That's not
like,
a thing.
People are already sort of like pining away for him again, which is like a real head scratcher. But I mean, so it's sort of, you know, it seems like the table could potentially be set for him to run again, which wouldn't have been the case even a few years ago.
No.
Yeah.
I think that this maybe is. Like with the, I think they're maybe over anticipating that there will be interest in this. The way that they do with Clinton a lot, where
I think so
everyone thinks like Democrats are just going to blow out about Clinton. And like Democrats never get that excited about her and they never have. And I think that, you know, he could fail into the candidacy the way Romney did for sure. Because he might, if he's the only reasonable looking person running, he could very easily get elected in the primaries.
If he runs against the same clown car of people that ran in the last time, then like, he could very easily be the king.
Exactly. Like,
he'd
any
be the only
person
one who could put together a sentence.
Who's not an actual Looney Tune.
Right.
You know, he could easily be the candidate, but I think that maybe they overestimate the amount of, like, excitement he would generate once he was the candidate, which is the same thing I say about Clinton all the time.
Yeah.
It's fine to think that she could be one of a pool of candidates who are going to run in the primaries.
Right.
But as happened last time, she doesn't make the base excited. And I think that people knew that, and that's why they didn't vote for her in the first time. And I think maybe she could win the primaries this time. We don't we don't have a lot of options. No. But like, when she's the candidate, is everyone right. going to be like, yes, Hillary? They're going to be like, oh, another Clinton.
That's
like,
the thing.
You know, like, that's...
Can Jeb Bush beat the head of Godfather's Pizza and Rick Santorum? Like,
yeah.
Sure.
Sure
probably
can.
Wipe the floor with those right? two fuckers. But then what happens?
Right. Then someone else has to vote. Then other people are involved.
Right. Yeah. Then it gets tricky.
Although if he's running against Clinton, it might be just a really low turnout year.
I know, right?
Like, everyone chucks it.
Yeah.
Be a lot of chuck voting going on then.
That's right. Guys, there's a real problem in the Army right now.
Don't know if you heard about this.
Louis Gohmert is bringing it to everyone's attention.
He's on the case.
He's a very important public service for everyone, and that it's man-on-man massage in the military is...
Cannot be allowed.
Cannot be allowed.
Cannot go on.
It is making us... The terrorists have won at that point. Mm-hmm, it's making us susceptible to terrorism.
Yeah.
Gays in the military.
This is why we can't have gays in the military.
Oh, God. This quote has to be read in its entirety.
Yeah, it's important.
And maybe... And then we're going to have a moment of silence right. after I read it, because you need a second with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're going to have to
All right.
think.
Here we go. It's long, so settle in. I've had people say, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with gays in the military. Look at the Greeks. Well, you know, they did have people come along who they loved that was the same sex and would give them massages before they went into battle. Okay. But you know what? It's a different kind of fighting. It's a different kind of war. And if you're sitting around getting massages all day ready to go into a big planned battle, then you're not going to last very long. It's guerrilla fighting. You're yes. going to be ultimately vulnerable to terrorism. And if that's what you're doing in the military like the Greeks did, as people have said, Louis, you've got to understand. You don't even know your history. Oh, yes, I do. I know exactly. It's not a good idea. That's it.
So... Here's what he sees as the problem with gays in the military. All that massaging that's going to go on is going to leave them vulnerable to terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's just going to be nothing but sex parties going on
that's
if
right.
gays are allowed in the military. The fact that women in the military are just being raped constantly and no one's doing anything about
that's
fine. People need to rape, you know? but gays in the military, sex fiends. It's never going to stop.
No.
And then, what are we going to do when we need to act fast in a terrorist attack? They're going to be exhausted from all the sex.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
That's it. Louis Gohmert.
That's nothing really more to add there.
No, that's it. Next.
Next.
God. I don't even know. Oh, God.
Speaking of people who actually shouldn't be having sex.
Oh, no. This makes me so sad for so many reasons, because it's just like, it's a tragic tale. And it's also... one of my favorite shows, which is upsetting, I know, but sorry about it. Also, it makes me mad because I've really stuck up for these losers.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I
was going to say, I feel like you have, I'm not going to say you've, apologist is the word that comes to mind, but I won't say apologist because
no,
I feel like you've made very salient points about them.
And, no, because I have always said, we're talking about Honey Boo Boo
right
now, which has been canceled because Mama June is dating the child
dating
molester.
A child molester who molested her oldest daughter.
20-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
That's not what you want.
Now, I have, the reason that I have stuck up for them is because, yes, that show is ridiculous, but it's enjoyable to me. And they are sort of like a ridiculous clan of people. But I always sort of like felt like it was a nice and loving family.
Right.
And that was sort of like why I didn't mind poking fun at them. And I also felt like, to a certain degree, they at least... It didn't take them long to figure out that the joke was on them, and
right.
they were sort of in on it. And they were making money
and
here, and they were
face
like,
is
they
very
were able
charming
to live.
And very precocious, and very
cute.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
What's her name, the littlest one?
Alana, Honey Boo Boo.
Alana, yeah, Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
She's great.
So anyway, so I had really been, I'd stuck up for them on multiple occasions to people who sort of like thought it was shameful that I was watching that show, and I really had to teach them. And now I'm...
Now
the teacher is becoming the pupil. Yes, exactly. So anyway, she's dating her ex, Mark McDaniel, who just got out of prison.
Like you do.
After being in for 10 years for forcing a girl to perform oral sex on him. And that girl was the then 8-year-old Anna, who was June's oldest daughter.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
That's not good.
That's not good at all.
That's not what you want.
No, not what you want.
And there have been conflicting reports about whether this is true, haven't there? Because
she claims
she's denying
to not
it.
Be,
but
like there's
everyone,
been photos
everyone
with
knows
them.
It's
there's
true.
Photos of like him and the kids too.
Yeah.
And so like I read an interview with someone.
I knew
like,
it was
going to
fall apart when Sugar Bear disappeared.
Well, I know. Well, and that's the other thing too, because like the rumor about what was going on there was that she had caught him cheating, but now there's like all of these allegations that like
maybe that was not what happened. Yeah,
when he got out of prison that all of this started, and that timeline would sort of make sense because like they I think split up over the summer, and like he got out in March of last year.
Yeah,
so because they haven't been split up for that long.
No,
she and that was a recent ish story. So anyway, that's the show has been canceled.
Immediately,
like the next day. I mean, they sort of didn't, and they have also. I think I read that TLC is offering Anna counseling if she wants it, which I think is a responsible thing to do. But I think that they're also, I think Child Protective Services is going to look into it because she still has Honey Boo Boo, and then she also has a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old.
Right. Yeah.
They're still under her care. You can't be having like your own child's child molester hanging out of the house.
This is something that I'm curious about that reality stars seem to be doing. It's like, you know the Sister Wives people?
Yeah.
What they were practicing is illegal in Utah.
Yeah.
And they knew that it was illegal, and they still went on television, and then they were forced to leave the state.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, didn't you think that maybe this was going to be a threat to you in a larger sense because you were just, like, leading law enforcement to your door?
Right.
Like, if you're going to be a person that's dating a child molester,
right,
don't be a person who's on national television.
Right, I know.
If you are on national television, people are going to find out you're dating a child molester.
Yeah.
If you're not, then you can probably go on being an irresponsible, horrible parent, and no one will say a word.
That's right.
But, like, I do wonder about these TV families that make these, like, clearly terrible decisions.
I know.
That, you know, and sort of don't acknowledge the fact that they live in public, and they exist in public, and, like, this is public business now.
Right. Well, I think on some level, it's a little bit different for, I mean, it's not, because you're a reality star, and you are on television, but I think that, and you do obviously have to be smarter about it, and this is not a genius family by any stretch of the imagination, but it's also important to note that she is my age and a grandmother, by the
way.
Yeah,
no, that's
just
true.
Let's think about that for a second. So
she's in her early 30s, friends.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think she
that
had...
That blows my mind.
I think she had her eldest daughter when she was like 14 or something like that, and that eldest daughter now has a child. Anyway. But, yeah. Oh, it's just... I mean, it's terrible. It's also, it's just like heartbreaking because it's like,
sad.
Don't do that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's like,
no
on,
better.
On TV or otherwise. Like, don't be dating
your
child's child molester. Like, that's not a thing. Don't do that.
It's not a plan.
It's not a
plan. I know, and it's sort of like, it does, because that was sort of like the one sort of redeeming quality of that show is.
You really felt like they all loved each other.
Right. You felt like in their own way they were being good parents.
Right.
You know, it wasn't maybe the way that you or I would be a good parent.
Right.
But, like, you felt like they wanted to be good parents and that
correct.
They were trying and they loved their kids and
right.
whatnot.
Yeah.
I don't know that I feel that way at this moment.
It's hard to.
It's hard to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in any case,
have to have
we
another
end on a terrible tragedy.
Trash box show to put in its place. There's enough of them.
19 and counting. Nothing like this ever happens
no,
on 19
I can't
and
give those people my
I
time.
I love 19
I know
and
you
counting.
Do, and my parents watch it too, but I just can't in good conscience, like... Good.
Well,
I mean,
they're terrible. They're terrible
people. I was
going
to say, they're as terrible in a different way.
Oh, I would argue that in a lot of ways they're worse.
Right.
Because their children don't seem to be real people.
Right.
Honey Boo Boo...
Well, and they're bigots.
Right, they're bigots. Mean, that's a problem
that's
that I have
problem.
With them.
Yeah.
And they're anti-choice activists to an extreme, and they drag their little kids into anti-choice activities.
Totally.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
And I have always said that I felt like that was a TV family that being on national television has really done good things for them because they would have been so isolated
right.
that they probably wouldn't have known what was
right.
3 feet outside
yeah,
of their
they
property.
Got to go to New York on a book tour last year. And
they went to Israel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
They've met people.
Yeah.
They're like out there in the world a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they would have been. But in any case, I can understand why you're not interested in them because they're also terrible people.
Right. But the side hug is fascinating, though.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's an accidental
front hug.
shit gets real
God,
complicated.
I know.
It's
yikes.
Really complicated stuff.
Yeah, if you don't know what the side hug is, you should look it
you
up.
You should definitely look into this. It's important that you know.
Learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then learn that it's actually a family rule and has no basis in anything.
Right. It's not. There's certainly no mention of a side hug in the Bible.
No.
I can guarantee that. I've read most of it.
No.
It's
and
nothing about a side
never once
there.
Mentioned. In any case... that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week, and then you'll know the news from next week, too.
That's right.
Bye. Bye.